Folks, if you're struggling with a relationship with your team or your boss or your peers, or maybe you're not struggling, but you just want to get better in terms of relationships and you understand DISC, we highly recommend you consider our Effective Relationships series of podcasts. You can buy a series telling you that if you're a D, how to relate to your directs, each of whom D, I, S, and C, or if you're a D, relating to your boss, who might be a D, I, S, and C. It will tell you in every podcast, some of them as much as 2 hours long, how to handle meetings, how to handle delegations, how to handle feedback and coaching, how to brief your boss, how to disagree with your boss, how to communicate in general with your boss, what your boss wants from you and what you might want from your directs as well. Many of the show notes are 20 and 25 pages long to give you many, many examples and many, many details of behaviors you can engage in to, again, as we like to say, reduce the drama, reduce the tension, reduce the conflict, and increase the harmony and collaboration, which leads to better outcomes because it's all about results and people are what's important. Welcome to Career Tools, our guidance on dealing with a whiny coworker. Here we go. So, Wendy, one of my least favorite things in the world is a whiny coworker. I've had them. They complain about everything. I know some people do it because they're pessimists. Of course, people like me who are optimists wish they were quiet pessimists. Some people do it because they want to correct other people. Regardless, we need a way to help ourselves when we end up with somebody who's just a whiner, a complainer, always moaning, complaining, and so on. So what do we do?
Okay, so the outline is, first of all, we're going to avoid infection because whining is infectious.
Oh, okay.
Use excuse me phrases. Don't expect them to change.
Yeah, good. Oh, that's so good. Yeah.
And don't go to your manager or HR.
This is so good. These are the don't expect them to change and don't go to your manager or HR are classic mistakes that people make. Well, I'm going to change them. Yeah, dude, you're not. You're not going to change them. And don't go to your manager because now you're whining. And don't go to HR because they're going to say like, well, we need to collaborate with all types of people and we ought to understand where they're coming from. No, you shouldn't. Folks, you shouldn't. You're not a psychologist. You're never going to understand where everybody else is coming from. If you've ever had the experience of saying, it makes complete sense to me, and why doesn't everybody else see it this way? They're thinking the exact same thing in a completely different way than you are. Your ability to understand somebody else is so limited, and it just takes having 40 or 50 years of life experience under your belt before you realize it. And the idea of us practicing psychology is ludicrous. So let's do the first thing. Let's inoculate ourselves. How do we avoid infection?
And before we start, for all the Brits and the Australians and anybody else who learn English, whiny is whinging.
Whinging,
and
exactly.
I think the official term for English people in Australian is whinging pom. So
whine is pom. Okay. And those people of the world, which is to say all 7 billion of us other than Wendy, who have read the Harry Potter books, know that I think Harry Potter's uncle, with whom he lived when he wasn't at Hogwarts, lived on Whinging Lane, if I'm not mistaken.
A very good place for him to live.
Yes, exactly. And if I remember correctly, the actor who played him just passed away recently. So truly great, great character, great series, great books, Wendy, in case you ever decide
really?
To read them.
Really? Yeah. If I ever break a leg.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we've got vocabulary, but this whiny behavior or whinging or complaining, it is infectious. It's like a kind of the opposite of a tornado, like a whirlpool, sort of, that it's there. And if you get into the edge of it, you get sucked in and you can only go down.
Well, I think that's true for a lot of people. I think we don't realize it. I don't think it's true for everyone. But I think we probably don't realize it. And when you agree with it, you think it in your head. And as a man thinketh, so is he, right? Meaning, be careful of your thoughts, they become your words. Be careful of your words, they become your actions. Be careful of your actions, they become your habits. Be careful of your habits, they become your way of life. You make a point about, you say, you find yourself agreeing with his opinions in the show notes. I know you didn't actually say it that way just now. Okay. And for those of you who are licensees, you can download the show notes and read them to save yourself time in the future. If you're not a licensee, we encourage you to do that. But you find yourself agreeing with his opinions. This is incredibly important. You're in a positive mindset. You're having a good day. It has become polite to agree with things that we actually don't agree with. And there is a case to be made in organizational life that if somebody's whining, you can choose not to agree. I'm not saying you disagree, although I would. I would say, no, I don't see it that way. Or, no, I think you're wrong. And it may not help my relationship, but they're not helping my relationship with them when they sit around and whine. Some people use it as a way to connect with others. The problem is, if they connect with you through whining, guess what they're going to continue doing? Is whining. So you find yourself agreeing. You say something. In your head, you say, well, that's dumb. But what you say is, oh, yeah. Or, yeah, right? And you're just kind of going along.
Uh-huh.
But that is not positive. First of all, they don't know that you're disagreeing in your head. And you're saying things that cause that thought to enter into your head. I'm not suggesting you attack people. But you've got to, as you say, engage in these conversations for as little time as possible to disengage, right?
If you say out loud, I agree with you, or, you know, oh, yeah, I know, you know, which is, it's not agreement, but it's, you know, I heard you kind of thing. Your brain will look for examples. If it thinks you want to agree, it will be like, oh, well, I'll look for some examples. And if that whiny person has just complained that your boss is always late to meetings, and it might not be true, but your brain is now looking. And if it's 30 seconds that he's late, it'll be like, oh, right, he is always late to meetings. So
good.
You have to be careful what you say and what you think, like you said.
Yeah. So to reduce your chance of infection, you've got to keep conversations with Whinging Walter short. You've got to stay away from her, right? Him.
Yeah. So people in general... only do actions for which we are rewarded. That's basic psychology, is that if we do something, we do it because there is some kind of reward. And it might be only a short-term reward, and the long-term reward is actually a bad thing, but in the short term we feel good, but there is always a reward. And the reason people whine or look for negatives or complain about things is because they get attention. People pay attention to what they're saying. And even if you just go, uh-huh, or, you know, we all make those kind of, yeah, I'm listening noises, because it's impolite to look someone in the face and who's talking to you and just go, no, or not say anything. And so we reward that person by paying them attention. And so they whine more because they're getting what they want.
I'm going to get a little theoretical for a second. This brings up something that's fundamental to organizational life, which is called the principal and agent theory. The principal is the organization. And I don't mean principal as in a person. I mean the primary idea. And the agent is the person that was hired to do what the organization needs it to do. The individual who whines, unless they're not mentally competent, they know that whining is not effective or appropriate. Okay. Now, if they come into your office, sit down and say, I want to explain to you why I disagree with what we're about to do and see if we can't come up with a solution. Fine. That's not whining. Okay. That is seeking solutions and having open discussions and debate. Somebody who just whines, this will never work. Or can you believe they're doing this again? This is insane. Jeez, don't they know anything? Those people need to get out and live in the real world. Okay. So that's whining. And they know that what they're doing is inappropriate, maybe too strong a word, but essentially they're asserting their individuality over the company, over the organization, which is fine. You're an individual, except that the organization doesn't want them doing that, and they know that. Okay. When they whine to you, they're attempting to get you to agree with them, to step over the line and to be on the agent side of things, the individual side of things, because in part they know that they need more people to feel better about the fact that they're disagreeing with the organization. So when you agree, in their head, they're drawing you into something that you probably don't think you're being drawn into. And even if you agree, when in your head you're saying, no, that's dumb. And you're supporting what they're doing. And as Wendy says, your mind starts to turn negative as well. So if you want to be a professional, it's not professional to sacrifice your relationship with the organization in order to have a relationship with somebody who is basically saying, I'm motivated not to be in alignment with the organization. When we talk about alignment, one of the things we want in organizational life is people who don't complain. It's okay to disagree. It's okay to talk about it. It's not okay to whine and complain to your coworkers. And if you're the coworker, you're put in a situation where you have to choose. Okay, we want to keep our conversations short and we don't want to argue. We may want to problem solve, but basically the first thing is we don't want to have long conversations where we sit around and, if you'll pardon the expression, bitch about the company. It doesn't make you a professional. It simply makes you in alignment with somebody who's not behaving professionally.
Exactly. And even though we say relationships are really important, right? You should have a relationship with everybody, blah, blah, blah. There's a depth of relationship, and a deeper relationship with someone who's whiny is actually not going to help you. So you might as well keep the relationship with that person cordial, in a state in which you can work together, but you don't need to sit with them in the lunchroom for an hour listening to them whine about every little thing they find wrong.
Yeah. And in a reverse on your comment about whinging, for our American listeners, cordial, Wendy's word cordial means cordial. That's how we say it in the colonies.
Oh, this is so much fun. We could do this bilingually.
It's lovely. It's delightful. Okay. So we recommend using excuse me phrases.
Yeah. So pretty much anything that starts excuse me is impossible to refute. If I say to you, excuse me, I must leave the room, it's almost impossible for you to say, no, I won't excuse you. Like, who's going to do that? The only person who can say that to you is your mother in the middle of an argument. Like, I know you mind, you're going to stand here and listen to me. But nobody else can do that. So just follow up with something that sounds reasonable. So you can say, would you excuse me? I'm late for a report. Or would you excuse, I've just got to go prepare for this meeting. Or would you excuse me? I have to go pick up something. And just don't allow the whiner to re-engage you. So if they say, what report? You can like, one he asked me to do last week, I really must go. And start walking away. Use your body language to say, we're not having this conversation.
And let me go a step further, because everybody always asks me when I'm out delivering training and coaching that they say, oh, well, what happens if you're in a meeting and you can't just walk away? What happens if I'm in my cubicle and somebody does that to my cubicle? Well, okay, fine. The cubicle one is easy. You just turn and say, would you please excuse me? I'm on deadline. Or would you please excuse me? I've got to send something here. And yeah, it's possible that the person would be boorish enough to say, I'll sit and wait. And they sit in your cube. And then you don't need to say anything else. They're being a boor. You can't cure them of that boorishness. And so the right thing to do is simply to work for quite a while. And hopefully they walk away. Because it's rarely polite to be impolite in response to impoliteness. On the other hand, if you're in a meeting and somebody starts whining to you, you could say, would you excuse me for just a moment, and get on your phone, which apparently is totally appropriate in meetings everywhere all the dang time. Or you could say, would you excuse me? I'm really trying to focus on the meeting right now. This is completely appropriate. It is a polite thing to do. And many of you are listening and saying, oh, well, that might hurt their feelings. Yes, you're right. And it might. And you're not responsible for their feelings, first of all. And second of all, they started it. And if we can't hurt someone's feelings slightly, not that we actually do it, when they come to us and do an impolite, unprofessional thing, then we're all going to fall down the slippery slope or go into the whirlpool of infection that Wendy talked about. So we need techniques to defend ourselves, to Teflon ourselves against these kinds of less than ideal behaviors. So it's completely appropriate. It works just fine.
Yeah. If you're in a meeting with one person, then you could absolutely say something like, yeah, I hear you on that point, but I'm concerned that we won't get through everything. Can we move on to the next one? And if you're in a big meeting, exactly, I would say, I can't listen to you and listen to this. I'm sorry, I have to listen to this. But you don't have to give a reason. This is one thing that we all kind of learn, that if we want to say no to someone or if we want to get out of something, then we have to give a reason that sounds good. But you don't actually have to give a reason. If somebody says to you, would you, I don't know, bake cakes for the school PTA, you can absolutely say, no, I'm sorry, not this time. And that's not what we do. We always say, no, I'm really sorry, I've got this and that and the other to do. And every time you give them more information, what you're giving the other person is information that they can use to counter your argument. So in the same way at work, you can say, would you excuse me? And not give them a reason, not say you have a report to do, not say that you have to send something, just walk away.
Yeah. And you know what would be bad about that? It might be bad that they complain to somebody else and they say, you know, it's funny, every time I go over to Mark and start to share something with him, he says, would you please excuse me, and walks away. What a rude person.
And guess what? He's not going to come whine to you anymore.
Yeah. And what I suspect is there's a chance that they'll convince that other person that you're a rude person. Although, generally speaking, if you're polite to everyone most of the time, and in fact, walking away from somebody's whining is a form of politeness, if they convince them, fine. But they're probably not going to, because you're going to be polite and they're going to say, oh, that's, you know, that doesn't sound like Mark or Wendy. And that person who's talking to them at the time is always negative, and they know they're always negative. And so they'll say, no, that's probably you. And maybe they'll learn something. More importantly, okay, if a person who's a whiner starts complaining to other people about you in general, this is a competition you're going to win by being a professional. Your job is not to try to make friends with everybody and keep everybody happy. And if somebody is a constant whiner, is an inveterate whiner, and they complain that you're not, you tend to excuse yourself and walk away, and it's hard for them to have a relationship with you, sooner or later, the smart people, the good people, the polite people are going to figure out that you're doing the right thing, and this person who's a pain in the tail to work with is doing the wrong thing. And you're not going to please everybody all the time. Remember, man, boy, donkey. So it's okay. Whining is a case where you have to make a choice about whether you want to be aligned with the professional people, the people who get stuff done, or the people who are negative.
Yeah. You can't do this to your boss. This is like this is for peers. If your boss is whining, you actually have to listen most of the time. You can't really just leave.
Yeah, probably true. Yeah, good point. Yeah. And I would say that some of the podcast about gossip, I don't know that we have a podcast of what to do with a whiny direct or complaining direct, but we probably need to. And it's a simply case of giving feedback, right? Mm-hmm. When you say that, it's probably not effective. Okay. The next thing we need to say is, like you said, don't expect people to change.
What we said earlier was there is a positive effect in their life every time they whine, because otherwise they wouldn't do it. And they want those. They want that attention. And for all of us, there's a cumulative, even if there's a cumulative negative effect, it takes extreme circumstances to make us change.
Can I just interject here something? When I said they know they're doing something wrong and then they are getting something out of it, folks, don't worry that those things are in competition. They are. One of the important psychological concepts in managing an organizational life is called a competing commitment, meaning if somebody does something you don't expect, or if you're asking somebody to change, if you're asking somebody to change and they won't change, it's because there's a competing commitment to what you would be asking them to do. And in this case, I think it's overly simplified, but we could say misery loves company. Mm-hmm. And the company they get is the competing commitment. That is the positive associated with what they do, regardless of the fact that they know intellectually that what they're doing is not effective. And generally, it's been my experience that people who have an intellectual drive or an intellectual knowledge of a good or a bad and an emotional knowledge of a good or bad, they're going to do the things that's the thing that's emotional. They're going to do the things that feeds their feelings rather than feeds their thinking. That's been my general experience. Not saying it's always right. But I think that's a good way to go about, to think about this particular situation.
Exactly.
Folks, you're not going to change people. You're just not. You're going to set an example, maybe, and they may choose to change. But you intervening, trying to get them to change, their first response is going to be resistance, certainly, particularly if you're a peer.
Yeah. Think of all the things that, you know, people do that are harmful to their long-term health, but it feels good on a day-to-day basis. If you're one of the people that does not do that thing, say it's smoking, there's lots of non-smokers who will tell smokers, look, that's really bad for you. I'm concerned for your health. Let me help you do this. Let me help you do that. And it's not until the person decides to change that they can stop smoking. And this is the same thing. They're doing it for the daily day-to-day reward. They know full well that there's a long-term implication, but someone intervening isn't the catalyst for change.
Yeah, good. And what's really important is your behavior is the only one you can change. Everybody else has to change their own. Behavior is the same thing as motivation. It's always owned by the person. You're never going to change somebody else's behavior because they're the one that has to change it. You might influence them, but you're not going to change their behavior. And you're also not going to change. You're not going to motivate somebody else. All motivation is internal. Not that motivation is that important.
So a manager might be able to change a direct's behavior, or at least in their presence. You know, a manager might threaten, a manager might be able to curtail some of the rewards, yeah? And therefore, at least in maybe the meeting that the manager is in, the direct will not do it. They'll probably carry on doing it outside of that. Or people that have only been in the workforce for a little amount of time and have only just developed the behavior, or have seen it on someone else and like picked it up, those people might be able to change. But again, it's down to them. You can explain that, you know, if you've got someone who's been in the workforce like a year and they're doing this, you can explain to them, hey, this is not helpful for your long-term career. This is why.
Yeah.
But you can't change them. All you can give them is the explanation and then let them think about it and maybe they'll change and maybe they won't. But again, yep. You're not changing them. You're just giving them information.
Yep. Good. And you mentioned manager. And so I might think if Joe, my coworker, is whining that since I can't change Joe, maybe my manager can by giving him feedback, I should go to my manager. But you're saying, no, don't go to my manager and also don't go to HR.
No. Okay, so managers in HR are for solving problems that you can't solve yourself. They're there to remove roadblocks. They're there to give you advice. They're not there to solve problems you can solve yourself.
Yeah, I wouldn't even go that far. I think that's far too broad. I think there are many people, if we say manager in HR for problems you can't solve yourself, all you have to do is then define down what you can solve yourself as really small, and therefore I go to my manager HR.
Yeah, true.
Right? It depends on how cynical you want to be about the average professional behavior or unprofessional behavior, organizational behavior, we'll call it. Okay, so whining's annoying, and yet we can't stop it. It can certainly bring us down. We can change our behavior. I guess your point is the solution, changing my behavior and disengaging and reducing the amount of time, there's no reason to talk to my boss or to HR. That's the point you're making about involving them.
Yeah, the change of behavior is inside yourself. And we've already said it's impossible for someone on the outside to change that person.
There's an even easier one than that. Take it from somebody who's been a manager for 25, 30 years, folks. Take it from someone who has worked with HR for 30 years. They'll laugh at you. You're responsible for your results and your relationships with other people around you. Going to your manager or HR about somebody who whines is like I'm sorry, this is horrible, but I'm going to be dark mark sort of for a minute. It's like going to your mommy and saying, Billy took my stuff. It's like the joke about two kids sitting in the back of a car. You know, Americans, many American families, it's less true now, but we used to take car trips in the summertime. And two kids or four kids or whatever in the back, if you have a Ford Rancho Squire station wagon, like my family did, you know, one kid gets really close to the other kid or puts their finger right next to the other person's shoulder and said, Mom, will you tell Billy to stop? And Billy says, I'm not touching you, right? And it's just annoying, right? So talking to your mom, and then mom has to say, Billy, stop it. Or worse, Janie, stop complaining. It is absolutely not done. You do not go to your boss. Okay. You have the ability to change. Now, you may want your boss to change them, and this is you renting your boss's authority, but your boss is unlikely to do it if he or she is smart. And as we've said, you can change the behavior. Now, a lot of people say, I want my boss to change it so that I don't damage my relationship with the other person. Come on, the other person is damaging their relationship with you. Okay.
And who do you want a relationship with, your peer or your boss?
Yeah. What's worse is then people say, well, I don't want to go to my boss, but I'll go to HR. Are you insane? You don't go to HR for stuff like this.
Let's just involve more people.
Yes, because HR is immediately going to go to your boss. And then your boss is going to be ticked. Why are you going to HR? Now I not only have to solve this problem, which, by the way, I'm not going to because I'm smart enough to know I'm not going to change that person's whiny attitude. But now I have to answer HR about it. And now when HR meets to discuss me, heaven forbid, at the end of the year, if we're having a steel cage deathmatch meeting about a layoff, they're going to say, well, yeah, actually, somebody did come and complain. One minor thing becomes, you know, the thing that gets talked about with the manager. You may not think this is true, but this is how it happens. So listen, folks, don't go to your manager. Don't go to HR. We've given you the skills. We've given you the behaviors. Engage in them, and you'll find that the behavior is reduced. They may choose to focus on somebody else, but it's not your job to change somebody else. You can't do it anyway. So you want to sum up?
Yeah, sure. So we said avoid infection, use excuse me phrases, don't expect them to change, and don't go to your manager or HR. And is this Stephen Covey, the solution to every problem is ever-widening concentric circles around your own desk?
Covey has talked about it, but I actually think it comes, I could swear it was General Mark Clark from World War II, American General from World War II, but I could be wrong. Yeah. But look, the point is, right, you worry about yourself.
Yeah, like, start changing your behavior, and that often changes that of people around you. Just because you've changed, it has a knock-on effect. But even if it doesn't, if you're doing something about what you perceive to be as a problem, that will make you feel better. And if you're disengaging from the person who's whining, then you're solving the problem because you're not being sucked into the whole whining thing.
There you go. Okay. Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
That's it, everybody. Hope this helped. Come back next week. More guidance. As always, On Point, Career Tools.
Career Tools produces actionable guidance for professionals every week. To receive additional materials via our newsletter and to find products for situations you may face, go to www.managertools.com. Search for Career Tools on Twitter and LinkedIn.